Welcome, everybody. My name is Reese Alley. This is the Build with Purpose podcast. We talk about the intentions, experiences, and issues that shape our lives and careers. And today I've got Chris Hibbard on the podcast. We're going to be talking about an array of different topics, where he came from in his career, where he is now, and the things along the way. But Chris, how are you?
Yeah, very good. Very excited to be here. I appreciate you having me on, and I'm excited to chat.
Absolutely. So, getting started, just starting from the very beginning, where did you get into the industry? I guess, where did it all start? Why are you not in textiles or fridge manufacturing? I guess, what has got you here?
Well, I guess it go back to 9 years old, you know? My dad and granddad worked together, owned a demolition asbestos company, and they hired me at nine. I guess you could say hired. I didn't really apply. I was told I was going to start working, but
yeah,
clean trucks and do all that good stuff. And my deal was detail the trucks. And at the end of the evening, after I had detailed the trucks, I could pick a piece of machinery that I wanted to learn how to operate. So every week, you know, I'd work Wednesday nights like 3:30, 8 o'clock. And I get to operate a machine for an hour or something. And started doing that, fell in love with it. I just knew that this was where I wanted to be. I like moving dirt. I like doing that kind of stuff, seeing all that happen. Now, when you're a kid, you think you want to run the machines and do all that stuff, and that's the dream. And then you do it for a little while, and you realize, well, hey, maybe I'll be the guy in the office, you know, that oversees that kind of stuff. So that was what led me to that path when I got to college, was construction management, was my familiarity with the industry and wanting to, you know, go further in it. So decided to major in construction and got out of school, you know, messed around my own company, all that good stuff. But ideally, just a lifetime of learning this and seeing it and growing up in it, I think is what led me to be here. And, you know, I always joke, I don't think you necessarily choose it. It kind of chooses you sometimes. And I think it did. And I just haven't looked back since, you know.
And given that there's a lot of people, especially younger people, you know, like us, that are moving away from the industry and they're trying to get into different tech this, tech that, software this, software that, what is about construction that you prefer the most?
It's never going to go anywhere. You're not going to replace it, you know? You can go into McDonald's at some point and make a robot that's going to put cheeseburgers in a bag, you know?
No,
but if you can fully convince me that AI or a computer is going to be able to sit there and cut a grade on its own and solve a problem when the pipe's not falling like it should. And I don't think that there is a replacement for that in our lifetime, you know, outside of guys with experience. So I don't think it's going anywhere. I think it's an endless opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. So going back to some of the first early jobs that you had, you mentioned the detail on those trucks and whatnot. But going back to those really early days, you know, what were some of the earliest memories of those that you liked, that you enjoyed? That was something that you look back on, you're like, I'm glad I went through that. I'm glad I could experience it.
Well, I think my biggest thing would be my first real gig out of college in the construction industry.
Yeah.
Which was with a retaining wall company, specialized in retaining wall installation and residential site development, culvert installation, and then concrete CIP wall installation, that kind of stuff. Messed around with some head walls, things like that, but mainly big modular block, basket walls, culverts, that kind of thing. And when I mean culverts, I'm talking arch culverts, you know, crossings and creek crossings, that kind of stuff. That was the coolest thing to me because that was a real dive into heavy construction work. You know, coming from landscaping, everything was a little bit of light, you know, installing sod, doing some stuff like that, and then going to oversized machines and these big walls with mass amounts of material threw me into this whirlwind of, truthfully, I had no idea what I was doing, but I had to learn it. You know, I was very blessed to get a good position like I did. And I knew that it was adapt or die. So I think looking back, the coolest part about it was like the school of hard knocks. You know, there wasn't somebody saying, hey, here's A, B, and C. It was kind of like, hey, figure it out, you know, to an extent. You had some support, some help, but a lot of things were trial by error. And I think as time goes on, I realized that that was how I learned the most. I learned way more from that than I would have learned from somebody pointing at things or saying, do this, this, and this. It was just learn by doing. And I think getting in a position like that at a young age sets you up for success down the road, you know, at still a young age. So I think for me, you know, learning how to manage production and you know, learning how to operate a company like that at 24, 25 years old, really gave me an advantage, you know, into what I was going to be doing after.
Yeah. And for those that, you know, believe Chris is being too humble, that was $2.5 million a month in production between 11 retainable crews. So for the people that think that was just a little gig that was out in Wonderland, it was a lot more than that. And in the early days of that specific experience, what was something that maybe the early crew members or the superintendents or foreman, however that was set up, what were some of the things that they would say about you?
Well, I think that they would definitely say in the beginning, what's
the dirt?
Yeah, yeah. You know, like, I think they would really be like, who the hell is this guy and why is he here telling me what to do, you know? That was a big struggle for me, was coming in at 24 years old to a bunch of guys that had been doing it for 15, 20 years. They see me walk in. I'm coming from the landscaping industry. In 100% truth, anything over a 4-foot retaining wall, I have no idea. I don't even know if I knew what GeoGrid was yet, you know? I had no idea people used 300 size excavators to build retaining walls. I had no idea that basket walls could go 50 feet high. I knew nothing about this. So when I come into this and I have all these guys that have been doing it forever, and then there's me brand new, you know, they're like, hey, this is the guy that you're going to call when you need something. I think they were probably like, why am I calling this guy? Why am I not doing that job?
Yeah.
But there was a big thing for me. And I think what I realized in the beginning was you can't fake it. Okay. You can think you can. And I think originally I thought, hey, maybe I can, you know, BS my way through this, so to say. But I think you realize quickly that that's not so much of an option. So I started asking a ton of questions and really diving into and spending a lot of time with those guys on a day-to-day basis. And I think what I started to realize then was I started to gain some respect. So I think in the beginning, the first couple of months, they'd be like, why is this guy here? What does he know? How did he get this job? Into, okay, he wants to learn. He's here to support us and play on the same team as us. And that made things a little bit smoother as time went on, you know?
And on that topic of, I guess, the adoption of being a younger person on the job, and, you know, there's a fair amount of people that still made more than you at that time in that whole organization. Not that they knew that or you knew that at the time, but how is the adoption of that? Because I think there is a lot of stigma, especially when it comes to like unions and things like that. You get in and you have to pay a unnecessary price for 30 years. When I say mediocrity, I don't want to put that down because there's some people that have been in a certain position for a really long time and that's what they enjoy doing. That's what they like doing. They don't want more responsibility and that's fine. But as someone that did want that responsibility and wanted to take on new things, what was something that maybe you did or tried to do, talked about doing that you think made people adopt you the most after a little while? You talked about the experience that you asked them about, being humble and asking those questions and trying to delve into that as much as possible. But over the course of time, what's probably the main attribute that people talked about you the most that said, hey, I trust that guy. I want to listen to him.
My willingness to, I don't want to say to fight for you, but my willingness to do whatever you needed me to do. So there was multiple times. And when you have 11 crews, you have great superintendents in place to manage those 11 crews alongside you.
Sure.
So I had an awesome team of guys, Victor, Edgar, and Jesus. And then Pedro came in for the concrete when we really started going with the concrete. Fantastic guys that you could put on a job, give them the plans, do a pre-construction, go over it, and pretty much get a call halfway through and then at completion, sometimes calls in between. The calls in between is where you gain trust from your team. because it's nothing to get guys to a job and put the material on the job site and then say, call me when you're done. But it's when they call you 2 days in with a problem that they might not be able to figure out, that truthfully in the beginning, I probably didn't know how to figure out if they didn't. But taking the time to figure out how to assess that problem, who to talk to, who to call, and how to help them get to the final solution. When you do that time and time again, and you show those guys, hey, if you have a problem, you can come to me and I will solve it, even if I don't know it. They will do anything for you, trust you with everything they've got, and continue to work hard for you. And that's all you can really ask for. So I think, you know, putting trust in your guys and allowing them to put trust back in you is the biggest way to adopt into a working relationship with a crew of guys like that who might have way more experience than you do or who don't. But that's the main building block, I think, for moving down the line and things running smoothly.
Yeah. And before I move on to another topic, I do want to ask, just I'll ask this a couple different times throughout, but where was the time you mentioned you never looked at anything over 4 foot in terms of a retaining wall? You didn't realize it used 300s to build these big, massive structures. And when was the first time in all of that that you looked at yourself and got back in the truck after a meeting or something like that, or you're standing on site looking at something and you realized, oh my God, I should not be here?
Yeah. So, there's probably a couple of those in the beginning, honestly. But I remember I was supposed to start with, when I started with the company, I was supposed to spend 3 weeks in the field. I was supposed to spend a week building modular block retaining walls. I was supposed to spend a week building gabion basket retaining walls. And when they say gabion basket, that's, you know, black steel or hot dip galvanized, not real gabion, but
yeah,
basket retaining walls. And then true gabion retaining walls, you know, with boxes and riprap on the inside. So I was supposed to spend a week doing each one of those. Well, my boss at the time was quick to fire at the hip, and he pulled me out of the field after like 5 days and was like, we got to come, you know, you're going to come in the office now and start doing all this stuff. So we went down to this job in Cartersville, not far from you, actually, called off of Smiley Ingram Road by the GSP headquarters back there. And we were building this new neighborhood for Clark Development. And we had two culverts to do in there at two different creeks. At the time, I thought these were these huge things. Well, come to find out, these were the two smallest culverts I would ever touch. But I'm sitting there. They drop them off on the truck, right? And we get the machines. We're unloading them, whole deal. And I'm looking at them. I'm thinking, what in the hell? I got these plans with me. I'm looking at the plans. And I'm like, I don't know. I have never seen an arch plated culvert before, ever. So I'm looking at it. I have no clue what I'm doing. So there's this company there, and I'm trying to think of the name as I'm talking of the grading company, but I can't. Wilbanks Construction. They were there. They were the general on the job site. And they got this guy named Jeff, and he's the nicest guy in the world. Old country guy. He's got his pistol on his hip. He's always got a big dip in. But just that guy you knew you could go talk to right away. But at first, I was sitting there talking to him. He's talking, and then the foreman's talking, and the owner of my company's there. He's talking. And I have the plans, and while we were getting out of the truck, he told me just kind of be ready to answer some questions. And I'm thinking, what questions? I had no idea. I don't have answers to any questions that I'm going to be asked. So we're sitting there looking at these culverts, and I was just waiting for it, and I knew it was coming. And this Jeff guy was like, well, what happens at 1071? He's like, what, this elevation change? And he looks at me because I have the plans. I had absolutely nothing, no clue, like none at all. So I kind of like look at my boss, and he saved me in the moment, came in. And so I got back in the truck. I had an hour and 20 minute drive back to the office. And I was kind of kicking myself because I'm like, what am I doing here? One, I look like such an idiot. I mean, I'm sitting with these guys who have been in here forever. There's this young guy. They're probably assuming I'm in my position because I really know what I'm doing. Truth is, I'm just thrown into it. I have to learn, you know? So I drove back and I was kind of like, is this, do I fit in here? Is this going to work? You know, am I cut out for this? But I think after the hour drive, I was kind of like, listen, everybody had to start somewhere, you know, take the blows as they come and just keep rolling. So
the plan issue is hilarious. The first time that I ever had to use a grade level of any kind, it was a, It was a Topcon laser that a customer of mine had.
Yeah.
And it was, she owned like 40 acres. And it was this area that she was grading out. She had a Bobcat T595 that was out there. And I had offered to help her with it. And I kind of painted my picture as this, you know, big time grader. You know, I was like the bee with knees out 18 years old.
Yeah.
And the guy, funny enough, so the person that was helping her used to work for Plateau 30 years.
Sure.
And so when I started talking about how all this experience I had about all, you know, all these different things and whatever. And so he starts quizzing me on, you know, he said, what's a sheep's foot roller? And the only reason I knew the difference between a vibratory roller, like a smooth roller, and a sheep's foot was because I looked it up on Wikipedia the night before, just by happenstance,
yeah,
on how to build a pond. And so I rattled it off like no problem. And funny enough, we became friends later on. I kind of let down the barrier a little bit on what it was.
Yeah.
And it, yeah, it was like, he's like, yeah, when you said that, he's like, I really still didn't believe you. But I was like, well, it, you know, he's right.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then when she gave me that Topcon level, it was leveling out a parking lot of, we were just spreading asphalt buildings. And there was a really small amount of fall. It was like 4 or 5 inches over probably 200 feet that we had to work with. And it was first time that I'm pretty good at grading, to be honest, but I'd never used the laser.
Sure.
And so she gave this thing to me and just she to talk about how much they've been using it and they really like it and da da da. And she was like, oh yeah, can you help me shoot grade real quick? And I was like, yeah, you're expecting to pull out like a pistol or something and go, it starts shooting a guy. And so she pulls out this box.
Yeah.
And so she sets it down, puts it on the table, and she's like, all right, well, you know, you tell me and then I'll follow suit. And I was like, sounds good, no worries. And so I pop this thing open, I take it out, I'm looking in like, all right, what the heck is this? What the heck is this? Like, yeah, this looks like it screws together. Yeah. Or I put the receiver on the tripod, put it over to the side. And then I act like this thing's out of battery or something like that. I can't figure out how to turn it on. Like, I didn't know that they self-level and all that. And so it finally gets going. And we get over there, and she's like, you know, 150 feet away. She's got the, she had the receiver, and I had the grade run. And she was like, all right, what, you know, what's the difference? And I'm just like, I can't find the laser. I don't know where this thing is.
And
yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
And so it was just terrible. And I worried somehow I had fooled my way into, you know, getting everybody to be on par with like, it's fine. It looks good.
Yeah.
And, it's fine. And so, and when everybody left, I used a 5 foot level to set it on the ground to try and figure out a note on town. Oh, no. Hey, but my claim to fame is it still works to this day.
Yeah.
It worked out.
Yeah,
but I made sure that there was no cameras and nobody was there.
That is an awesome story. So you smoothed your way through that one. Yeah, that is an awesome story. That is the epitome of starting in the industry at a young age.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
YouTube videos and
yeah,
asking the older guys.
There was plenty of times where even if, you know, we would get a bunch of different machines, and I was used to running Caterpillar or whatever, you know. So we'd get these different machines, Hitachis, John Deere's, whatever we'd have, Takuchi, and I would not know I wouldn't be super familiar with all the controls on the inside and the panel, you know, switching ISO to SAE and all that kind of stuff. But I didn't want to act like I didn't know what I was doing. So I'd always turn the machine on and I would get on YouTube and start looking up, where is this to switch to zero? The guys always be like, you good? But yeah, I'm just letting the machine heat up. I don't need to run cold.
Yeah, son.
Sit there for 10 minutes, do a quick YouTube research. And then usually that would get me. Don't get me wrong, but hey, fake it till you make it, man. You know?
That's so funny.
Yeah.
So I do want to back up for a second. We skipped. So that was at retaining wall business. And yeah, but before that, you had started your own landscaping business. And I just want to talk about one, why you did that, what it was like. And just given that you went from doing that to having $2.5 million of direct production per month. That's a huge number. It's like $25 million a year or something like that.
Yeah.
What was that like? Why did you do that? How long did it last? What was the setup?
Well, it was super cool. So I always have worked, no matter what, worked on farms, worked delivering pizzas, you know, always have had to make some source of income. Mom and dad did not. They gave me an unbelievable life, but by no means was everything handed to me. I had to work for what I was going to get. So I was working delivering pizzas at Papa John's, and I remember running these pizzas. We worked like 4 to 9 o'clock was like the shift or whatever it was. So I got home the one night, counted up my tips. It was like $41. And I was just like, what the hell am I doing? I know I have skills. I've worked on a farm. I've done some landscaping in the past, growing up, you know, in the industry. I was like, I know my way around a lot of this stuff. Why am I delivering pizzas for $41 a night when I could be doing something else? So I had a couple of buddies who had like a small time landscaping deal doing pine straw and mulch. And I called my buddy Grant up, and I just said to him, I was like, hey, do you need any help landscaping? I was like, I'm open. I said, you know, while I'm not working, I said, just $100 or whatever, I'll come and help you out. And he was like, yeah, actually tomorrow, he said, I got to lay mulch over at this house if you want to come and help me out. So went over there. I think we worked all day. It was like 8 hours. I can't remember how many yards of mulch it was, but it was a lot. It was, you know, I always joke about it. Back in the day, we get like so excited when we get like a 12, 14 yard mulch job. Don't ever want to lay mulch again for the rest of my life. Yeah,
I get that.
Pine straw till I die now. But I don't even want to lay that either. But anyway, started with that. And then we did that first job, and they gave me a $100 bill at the end of the day. And he was like, are you good with a $100 bill? And I was like, I mean, are you kidding me? I'm like, yeah, I'll take a $100 bill. Yeah, that's freaking awesome. Take me 3 shifts at Papa John's to make that. So got in with that, and we started working and just doing pine straw, mulch, stuff like that. Did a couple saw jobs. And then I had a little, you know, like some experience in operating and stuff like that. So we decided to try to expand a little bit and start doing some patios and some things like that, some hardscapes and a little more machine oriented stuff that could bring in some more money. So we started doing all that. And it was really a summer deal in between going to college back and forth. So we graduated college. We got a job with a landscape supply company called GLM Landscape Supply. They have location in Milton, Woodstock, and Duluth, and we were working at the Milton location. The owner met us while we had our landscaping company during the summertime and took interest in working with us and all that. Pretty much told us he wanted us to come in and help him expand this landscape supply company, take on some new branches and all this kind of stuff. Well, that didn't all pan out the way that we thought it was going to. So about 6-7 months into working there, I was driving home one day and I was like, I'm done with this. I was like, there is no future for me. I see where this is going. I was looking at the guys who had been there a couple more years than I had, doing the same thing that we were set up to do, and they were nowhere near where I wanted to be at that point. So I called up my buddy Grant at the time, and he was working at Milton. I was operating over in Woodstock. And I said to him, why don't we go back and start the company back up? And it was a pretty crazy call just to make on the way home from work, you know, telling somebody, let's quit a salary paid job that we know every week we're getting it on Friday, a paycheck, and let's go start our own thing. Now, I just bought a house, all this, so I had a lot on my shoulders. So we went and we started back up and we got going. We were getting some jobs going and the market became so saturated. Every guy with a pickup truck and a trailer was now a landscaper. I mean, everywhere. It just became an absolute bidding war on every single job. You know, you were going to lay mulch for 65 a yard, which at the time is what people were laying for. Well, there was another guy coming. He'd lay it for 58.50, you know, and then the next guy 56.50. And it just got worse and worse. We were not making any money. So the company, we had the idea. I had the vision for what I wanted. But truth be told, I had no idea how to run a company. I did not. I just knew what I knew from YouTube and reading online and all this stuff. I did not know how to actually be a business owner. So I remember I was working one day and my phone rang and it was the guy that I was going to end up working for. And he said, hey, what's going on? I said, well, if I'm going to be honest with you, I said, I'm knee deep in a ditch right now and I have no clue what I'm doing. That's the G version. It was the conversation went something like that. And he goes, funny thing, I'm in the same boat. He goes, why don't you meet me for dinner tonight? I said, okay. So met him out for dinner and this whole time trying not to lean on to the business that I have this other, you know, I didn't know where it was going to go, what it was going to be. Well, ended up pretty much making a deal with him at dinner that night. And he said, give me a month. I got to get some things in order. So I was still doing the landscaping and getting ready to button things up. Well, a month later, my phone rang. He said, are you ready to rock and roll? I said, yeah. So I left the landscaping company. It closed a couple weeks, couple months after I left. They dissolved completely. And I went on and took on working at Reinforced Wall Systems. And it was 110% completely different than anything I'd ever done. So I took some things that I had from the landscaping company and applied them into that position, but most of it did not transfer over. Like I said, I did not know what I was doing as a business owner. I did not know how to manage production efficiently yet. I knew how to be in the field and work and get it done, like grind it out throughout the day, being right there, getting dirty with the guys doing it. But I did not know how to manage a crew from pre-construction to billing, to doing all that, to invoicing, to accountants. I knew nothing about all that stuff. So getting into a position with, at the time when I started, it was six crews and, you know, grew to 11, but it was six crews when I started and 40 something guys or whatever it was. It was a complete change. I knew nothing. You know, I had to learn, like I said, I got thrown into it really, but it was trial by error. But I learned the most in my life during that time period of just getting it done and slowly learned how to become a production manager. So it was a lot different. I can't think of a lot of similarities between the two. You know, it was a completely different way of working, of thought. But that showed me that just because you're set on one path and you're doing it one way, you might be headed completely the wrong way. And I was. And this kind of steered me back and got me going. And it worked perfectly because I ended up where I wanted to be at. But it just took a lot, you know, to get there. But there was a ton of learning and a ton of change. So it's very hard to compare the two.
Well, very good. As far as, so you went through that, the other landscape company, and then now you're Reinforced Wall Systems and you're, you know, moving, growing six crews to 11 crews. You know, I think there's differences in everything of when you had the position at the Landscape Supply Center, clock in, clock out, and then you had your own business. There's no hours. It's as much as you can and do whatever you can to survive. And then you go from that to a position managing that many people and that much production. You know, what was the difference of your time? Obviously, at this point, you know, talking about personally, you know, now you're married as recent, but at the time you're just dating and you still have a personal life. You know, what did it look like time constraint wise when you made that shift?
Well, so with the landscaping company, truth be told, being young and making a good bit of money, we had a lot of fun with it too, you know? So, I don't think our personal time was killing us when we had that company going. If anything, we probably took too much personal time and didn't put enough time into the company, if we're being honest. But that's hard. Two best buddies, 22 years old, making all this cash, you know, you're going to go and have some fun with it. So that was kind of how we were living while that was going. And then when I switched over to the wall company, I realized, wow, there, you know, that is not
not the case.
No, that ain't how life works. So I remember when I started, you know, my boss at the time had said, my goal is for my phone not to ring anymore. And I would remember sitting there for the first couple of weeks and watching his phone ring. And I thought, good Lord, if I'm going to get all these phone calls, my phone's never going to stop ringing. Well, sure enough, that's exactly what happened. I would average anywhere from 75 to 100 phone calls a day about, and that would be 5 days a week. And then Saturday and Sundays, it would calm down, obviously, but Sunday.
But still getting calls.
Yeah. Yeah. Sunday night, right back on the phone. That's a direct result of not planning your week out the week before. If you have to spend a bunch of time on Sunday night planning your week out, you should have just done that on Thursday and Friday of the prior week. But you know, just 6 a.m. every morning, the guys were ready to get started. If they were there, I had to be in the area, you know, so I was at the shop with them. I was at the office just waiting because the phone would start ringing. I mean, 5:30 every morning, usually when those guys got in the truck, my phone would start. And then it would ring from 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning until, I mean, anywhere from 6 to 8 o'clock at night, just depending on the day and what we were doing. And that was every single day. And work came first before anything else. You know, I was very lucky. I like to hunt and fish. I was very lucky to be able to still do that. But in the 2 years I was there, however long it was, every hunting and fishing trip I took, any vacation I took, I'd never actually turned my phone off. I was in the hotel lobby, answering emails 15 minutes before I proposed to Erin, while she was upstairs still doing her makeup.
God.
And it was always one of those things of turn your phone off, don't worry about it until the time came. And the company was set up to where everything ran through me. My phone couldn't go off because if I didn't get it, who else was going to handle it most likely? You know, and not at anybody's fault of I was the one that was in the know with the operations. So it was hard to just pass that kind of stuff off. So there was really no, like, personal time during the week wasn't really a thing, you know? Like, I'm not saying I wasn't in the office every night until 7 o'clock, but you get home at 4:30, 5, 6 o'clock, and then your phone still rings another 2 hours. You know, never.
Not really all.
No, never missed a phone call during dinner. You know, I can't tell how many family dinners I got up from to go take a phone call, missed the rest of dinner. And you have to have a good wife and a good family to support that kind of lifestyle, you know, and Erin never wavered on me for that for a second. Always understood how important work was. You know, that's the main driving force behind everything. But there was no work-life balance. And yeah. I think I started to realize, looking out at some of the other people that I was working with in the industry, I was like, not everybody is living the same work-life balance that I am. So that's when I started to realize maybe there's more to it than just this, you know?
Absolutely. And in terms of the work-life balance, is that something you ever talked with anybody else in the company about? I know at least for the guys that I know, they're especially in like the development side of things, like y'all were, whether it's the grading, whether it's the, you know, more underground infrastructure side, utility side, you know, vertical side, no matter what it is, it seems to be a really common thing that it never does stop.
Yeah.
People work, you know, nights and weekends and all the time.
Right.
And, you know, relative to the residential side of things where, you know, I've been before and you came from, people get off work and they text you and they talk about it. And it's at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, Saturdays and Sundays. And so pretty much anywhere you go, at least that I've seen and that you've experienced, that's pretty much the expectation that you might be on salary. And if you're hourly, it's the same expectation, but you might be on salary. But it's not 40 hours a week. It's at the minimum, probably more like 50, 60, 70 hours a week that you're actually cognizant and where you're at, where you're going, and having to be alive, alert,
yeah,
run the company.
Yeah. No, definitely. And I think that that is a huge thing. And what I started to realize was in residential site development, everything is based, a huge part of it's based on weather, right? So it's very hard to grade mud. It's almost impossible, some people would say. I'm one of those people. I don't think you can grade mud that well. So if you got a bunch of rain coming in and your job site shuts down for a week, D.R. Horton doesn't really care, you know, why you are a week behind. You know, you can pull the whole, well, it's been raining. Well, that only works for so long. So I think in that industry, a big thing is you have to work when you can work, you know. And we saw how hard we ran at just getting done what we needed to. And we were like, well, this must just be how hard we have to run all the time. But then you start getting with these bigger companies, right? Plateau, Benchmark, Carmichael, D.R. Horton. You start seeing these guys who are just involved in it as you are, but they're like, oh, man, well, you know, I'm going to Colorado next week to elk hunt. And I'm starting to think, how in the hell are you doing that? How are you leaving? What you start to realize when you get to these bigger companies, they are set up for a work-life balance. Yes, you have to work all the time, but there is a team of people that covers what needs to be done, and it can help everybody in the sense of, you know, you don't need to be here 365 days a year. You can take 5-6 days off and go hunt. You can go fish, go on a family vacation. And I think when you run a lot of these companies that are 25 million and low management companies, well, if it's low management, if the management goes out of town, who's left?
So you're talking about the amount of staff.
Yes. Yeah, I should have clarified that a little better. So when you're with these companies that have a high management team, a lot of management members, and you see it run and one guy can leave and it continues to run, that's a work-life balance. But when you have a company that's doing $25 million a year and they have three guys in top management, That's not, there's not much work.
What is a work?
No, it doesn't, because you're just all the time.
You work, but it does for you.
Yeah, yeah, you work all the time. But not to mention, those three guys do completely different things. There was the owner. There was our estimator who, you know, sent out bids. He had nothing to do with production in the field or anything like that. And then me, who was pre-construction, construction, post-construction. That's the whole entire, it's the whole process, right? And then if I'm gone, you know, you have to give it to the owner, but how many times are you going to do that over and over again? If you have to keep giving your responsibilities to the owner, why did he hire you to do it in the first place, you know? So I think it's a big thing on management determines that work-life balance, you know? I think, you know, in the management structure of the company.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I guess we didn't introduce this, but you can probably pick up the context clues that we're both wearing SCA hats and SCA shirts because we're both working for SCA. And so with that being said, that's one thing we've really been trying to work on a lot and is building that management team. And it's one of those things where we'll probably do $4.5 million this year, $5 million this year on a good stretch on the back half of the year. But in that time period where we've been scaling, you know, a few years ago in that like $2 million range, it's really, really hard to build that management team because you really can't afford it, but you really need it. And now in a business model like the retaining wall business, where you can kind of get away without it for a lot longer just because the simplicity to work is much easier.
Of course. Yeah.
And so there's much less variability in the estimating process, production process, and things like that. But given that you obviously work with us now and it's been going really, really well, you've been managing a lot of our client relationships on the east side of town and around the general metro Atlanta area and involved in the estimating, the bidding process. And it's been a really phenomenal thing, and not necessarily building walls, but the kind of work that we do, stormwater systems, erosion control, and all of the like. But how has the difference been where, you know, you've come to us, had the schedule of the past. What have you noticed has been the biggest difference in terms of scheduling, timing, you know, how everything's led and what's going on?
And not to beat a dead horse, but I think it goes back to management structure. You come into a company, and I've said this since I've been here, this is a $4.5 million company with the management structure of a $50 million company. You know, we have some absolute killers in their positions that are just good at what they do. The right people are in the right places. And I think that the way that it's been set up and the way that we're proceeding makes it to where, one, our, you know, like we are big on, everybody has a work-life balance. And we have a team of people that when somebody doesn't know what to do, somebody else will know what to do. You know, when it comes to, you know, payroll questions, I have no clue as far as how we operate, you know, in payroll goes, but I can call Rich and he can have that solved in 2 seconds. If I have a question about an invoice, I call Michelle, that's solved immediately. Where a year and a half ago, if there was a payroll question, invoice question, I was answering those questions on top of, hey, my block hasn't showed up yet. We got an oil leak in the machine. So I think having, like I said, just a management structure that is set up for the team members to succeed is the biggest thing. I really do. Big believer in that.
Dan, with the, you know, and work-life balance we have here, we really, really try our best, as you know, to not work Saturdays and Sundays. Every once in a very blue moon, we'll have a crew work on a Saturday if it just rained for 3 or 4 days.
Sure.
And I will say, It does make the margins a lot harder to achieve,
right?
If we're only working that amount of time, never on Sundays, you know, almost never on Saturdays. And what have you noticed in terms of trying to fit in all of the normal things in the week? What have you noticed the difference of trying to do that Monday through Friday, really without the option Saturday or Sunday, that you notice relative to knowing in the past where you're going to have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and you absolutely know you're still going to be online Saturday and Sunday?
Sure. Yeah, I think to be 100% honest, I don't see it affect us in a huge way. We meet our schedules. We meet our times. Our customers are very happy. Our schedule's very smooth. Our guys are extremely happy. And I think if it works, don't try and fix it. You know, it's not broke. I think it's one of those things as time goes down the line and you get bigger and bigger and bigger and you start working with bigger GCs and stuff like that that do work on Saturdays, that might be something that could be changed. There might be a job we get on where they're like, hey, we work Saturdays. You know, sometimes the GC will say that. And if you're there supporting another contractor and they're working Saturday, well, you can bet that you're going to be there too. They're expecting that. But as far as what we're doing right now, I think it works perfect. I think it, like I said, it keeps our guys happy. It keeps everybody relaxed. I mean, we run pretty hard from Monday to Friday. But like I said, we get everything done in Monday to Friday. You know, could you always push it a little bit harder and put in some time on Saturday? Yeah, absolutely. But at what cost? You know, what difference will that really make in the end? I don't know. But as I said, for right now, when something's not broke, I wouldn't try to be going to fixing it. So,
with that being said, what is your favorite thing about the weekends now that you couldn't have said a year ago?
I get to have Sunday dinner and my phone not ring, you know, be on the bass boat on Saturday morning, phone's not ringing. I'm not sweating all day on Sunday because I don't know what's fixing to come at me on Monday morning. You know, stuff like that. Absolutely. Just, you know, not being under the microscope 24 hours a day, you know, I think that's a huge part of it. Not that, you know, like I said, if it comes down to it and you have to do it, that's one thing. But, you know, having the option and having the ability to, you know, have some real freedom on the weekends and, you know, get to go hunting next weekend. I don't have to worry about my phone ringing in the dove field and stuff like that. It's a pretty big advantage, I would say.
If Erin was here and had to make a comment about it, what would she say her favorite thing is?
Everything. Yeah. She would say everything. Erin was one of my biggest supporters in making the change, hands down. She saw what it was, I guess. I don't want to say what it was doing to me. That sounds so stupid. You know, it's a job.
But it has an effect.
But it does, you know. I had gained a bunch of weight. I was eating really bad. I was stressed out all the time. You know, just living out of my truck, eating fast food here constantly. You know, just unhealthy habits. And I was just miserable, you know. Get off these phone calls at 9 o'clock at night. You've just been fighting with somebody for an hour about, you know, the way that you're doing things, the way they want you to do things. And it's 9 o'clock at a Wednesday night. And then, you know, you got to be up at 4:30, 5 o'clock to start over again. Erin couldn't, I don't think she could stand seeing it anymore, you know? So she was a big advocate in me making a change for me to be happy. And she said it multiple times since I've started, just my whole personality, my whole attitude, which part of that's on me. You know, they say you shouldn't bring work home. It's hard not to when you live it all the time.
It's hard not to when it follows you.
Yeah, you know, so you only can do so much with that. But yeah, I think she's 100% pleased with my change, I would say. Definitely.
Awesome. And just to, I guess, cap things out a little bit, this is a little bit different because you're an internal, you work with us, but what are you most excited about, you know, your career path with SCA and what you think you can do being with the company?
The opportunity for growth. That's the absolute biggest thing here is that, getting it at the ground level. You know, I think getting it at the ground level of anything, you get to kind of put your input on how you want things to go. And when you have people who respect your opinions and they value them and they listen to them, they take those things seriously and they listen to what you have to say. And the fact of maybe this guy will make a good point. And I think that's a huge thing about our company is we listen to everybody equally, from our foreman, you know, to our laborers, to the owner of the company. You know, our founder is hitting two meetings for me today on his side of town because I've got, you know, six on the south side of town. That is huge. You know, that kind of stuff is, I think, is what separates us from so many others is that we have this team that will do anything for each other. And that makes the sky the limit for us. You know, I don't think I couldn't even sit here and talk about what I think my future looks like here because I don't know, because it could be so many different things. And I think that that's more exciting than anything, you know, it can be whatever I want it to be.
Yeah.
And I think that's unbelievable.
Well, very good. Any closing comments?
Happy to be here. appreciate you having me on. I'm excited to see where we go in 4.5 million this year. And hopefully in 2 years, we're sitting down at 25 million having the same conversation, recapping this one.
Amen to that. Well, you guys have a great time and we appreciate you listening.